Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. It is Sunday morning, March the 8th, 2015, and I'm very grateful to be with you as we take a look at the bigger picture. A little bit here, I have three very kind questions, questions about meditation, even prayer. And I don't get a lot of these, so I jump on them when I get them. Most people are not much interested in, well, either one of these, or they think they know. You know, when people know, then they're not available for anything else. So I think you're going to find this particular program, hopefully, very helpful and interesting. I want to thank my sponsors. I want to thank them all who make this radio program possible. It is only through their donations, their kindness, their compassion that these radio programs are allowed to be heard on the website here at aspire.org and on the internet. And I want to thank them for everything they do to make this possible. You enter into the lives of many people when you give. You don't know it. You may never meet them. You may never, you know, have the privilege of seeing whatever happens to their life after they've listened to a radio program or something like this, but it's there. And I want you to understand, all of you, that what we give, how we give, and the way we give is a very important thing. And I want to thank those of you who have the wisdom and the kindness to offer your donations to keep this radio program and our YouTube experience, the Aspire TV programs, are on our website at aspire.org as well as on YouTube. And all of this is there to be of service to you. First question comes from Regina, and she does not tell me where she listens to us from. Why is meditation so hard? I've been to your website, and you speak a lot about it. Why can't I get rid of my thoughts and meditate, Regina? Regina, meditation is not something you do to get rid of your thoughts. Please understand that. You're always going to have thoughts in your brain, in the background of everything that is going on in your mind for a while. Thoughts will always be there. They will always be the temptation. Thoughts are provoked by emotionality. So the more you are emotional, the more fear, the more anger, the more distrust you have about silence, the depth of your being, the more you live in that distrust and wanting things to happen that can't happen or you hope will happen or whatever, living in that emotionality, desire, ambition, pride, vanity, hubris, the more you're going to find inside yourself that your thoughts ramble on. Now, interestingly enough, Regina, when you are no longer interested in your thoughts, when your thoughts no longer are the voice of your emotional nature, you're going to find things change. You're going to find something alters within you. The practice of meditation is not to get rid of your thoughts. In the beginning, it is simply about dropping them, seeing the futility of them, seeing them for what they are, as they are, for who they are. What are your thoughts? What are my thoughts? What do they do? What are they about? What do they live for? They live for attention. They come from the frustration of our emotional nature that is constantly fighting with itself over various congregants of emotions. One set of emotions congregates over here, another over there, and then they come and they clash together, and we have anxiety, we have fear, and that's the makeup of fear. The clashing of one clan, a set of, shall we say, emotions versus another. And because there is no certainty to either side and the fight never is won, it can only be a fight, a continuous fight, we live in fear. constant fear simply because we're at war with the emotions. It's all happening in the background, something that most people cannot detect because they have not been interested in detecting it. They've been mesmerized, Regina, with the world, with what goes on in the world. They're so mesmerized with circumstances and conditions that provoke this war and keep this war going that they have no real interest in anything other than the war. And as long as you are at war with your elements, you're going to be in fear, and there will be nothing really certain about yourself in this life. So meditation is not really hard. It takes a certain discipline. When you want to do something that's very important, you have to find the discipline to do it. And that discipline is not found in, so to speak, talking to your emotions or calming them down or replacing them with another set of emotions. It has nothing to do with any of that. That is useless, and it keeps the war going. No. The way to do it is simply to allow them to have their war while you sit in utter focused silence. I give you Tibetan pulsing meditations to breathe through your chakras, to open up the vibrations of your inner being, your spiritual body, to use your spiritual body and to use your energies in ways that provoke loving kindness, compassion, things that the human emotional nature cannot sustain. And once you have abandoned ship, where you no longer are much interested in what is going on emotionally with your body, with your thoughts, with your emotions, you're going to find your whole demeanor changes. That's why we do Tibetan pulsing. We do it because we get to resonate to the tones. And in that resonation, we are using the body as a temple where it can echo the vibrations. And we sit in those vibrations rather than sitting in the arguments of our thoughts, which are constantly trying to show you pro this emotionally, pro that emotionally, and how they are constantly at odds with each other and fighting. It's all about giving up the fight, actually, Regina. It is about no longer much being interested in the fight that the emotional nature provokes in us and tells us we should or should not to be doing. This is where we find insight. In the lack of fighting, in the lack of trying to, shall we say, categorize our emotions or catalog them, we create that gap. There is in tone that gap. It can be felt in the tones, in the textures of meditation, and in the tone work of Tibetan pulsing. You can actually feel it. Now, what is necessary when one feels it is to drop everything else. You can't be concerned about what is going on in and of the world. You can't be concerned about up and down, right or wrong, good or bad. These considerations are not thoughts. They're the emotional war that is going on within us that we don't know is going on, and we don't know why. One thought will say, oh, Greg, do that. Oh, Greg, don't do that. Oh, Greg, think this. Oh, Greg, you shouldn't be thinking that. It's the emotional war that goes on and on and on. And until I am ready to drop that war, to see the utter futility of it, to observe it without being in it, there can be no progress made in my life. And that's the issue. Will I allow there to be progress in my life? Will I allow there to be a way of love in my life? That is the key to the whole situation. Love must be more important than this constant fighting I have in my mind. You're never going to, quote-unquote, get rid of your thoughts. Your thoughts will always be in the background, fighting, hassling, clarifying, unclarifying, understanding, not understanding your thoughts, your emotions, your body. It'll be a series of stories and repetitions and all sorts of things that just really don't matter. Honestly, they don't. How can I tell you that and have you understand it? So meditation is not about having no thoughts. It is a practice. It is a practice of not being intrigued by my thoughts. My thoughts that are contained strictly out of emotion. And when you can do that, when you can think from that point of view, that is when something dramatic begins to happen. Regina, that is when love begins to occur. It is only through love. It is only through life as love that we find meaning in ourselves. I hope that helped. Please forgive me. Namaste. I am amazed, simply amazed, at the whole idea that people have about meditation. They think that meditation is some sort of method where you just sit in no thoughts at all. And hence, they make that a very difficult thing. And when that's a difficult thing, then we don't do it. How can we do it? So there you are. It's a catch-22. Meditation is focus, concentration, willingness, playfulness, kindness. You should have a smirk on your face when you're meditating. Next question comes from Richard. Are there things you tell your students and things that you don't? Sometimes when I listen to you on radio or watch you on YouTube, I get the feeling you know more than what you're saying. Is this true and why? Richard. Yes, Richard. This is the third question I've had on this of late, and I don't know what's emulating from me that gives you this impression, but yes, it is true. It is true. I don't always tell what I know. I don't always tell what is going on either, because it is difficult to put into words. I'm not hiding anything. I just can't find the words for it. And it's because the things that I'd like to talk to you about, I can't talk to you about. I just can't, because you won't listen. You won't understand. Let me give you an example. And you've had many a teacher say this to you. As you give, so shall you receive. Now, I've given that for years to people. But they don't understand the spirit of that. It isn't in giving out of sympathy or out of pride or out of guilt or out of duty that matters. What matters is, how do you give? How do you love? It is about love. Now, I can't really explain what love is either. I can't explain what life is either. I can explain the equation, but I can't explain to you the qualities of that equation. It is impossible. Another language has to be conjured up. Another language has to be offered. And that language has to be intuitive between you and me. And if you have not developed that intuitiveness, then you will not understand what I am talking about. So it isn't that I'm not saying it. I can't say it. Not in the words you would like to hear, or in the phrases that would become comfortable to your ego or the way your emotional nature lives. This is a very difficult thing for most of us. We just can't hear what is being said. And if we're really honest, Richard, there is a language going on 24/7 that we simply don't listen to and don't get. This language is love. This language is the meaning of life as love. And it is being spoken, heck, it is being sung to us all of the time. You can hear this voice. You can hear this language. And every so often when the ego is down a little bit and we're not thinking as much as we usually do, or we're not wanting as much as we typically are, all of a sudden you'll hear it. You'll hear that language. You'll hear that song. And your heart will dance to it. Your being will rejoice in it because it belongs to that. But then we shut it down very quickly because we want our life to be normal again. And normal to us is where we are living, thinking, and moving out of shame, guilt, pride, vanity, hate, fear, all that stuff that we like to get involved in that makes us relatable to other human beings. I mean, how interesting a person would you be if you didn't have some gossip, some fear, some hate to talk about? What would you talk about if you weren't talking about someone else or something else, where you weren't putting someone down or you weren't saying things about other people or maybe even yourself where it was hateful, unkind, fearful, that kind of thing? I mean, where would we be? That's the point of it all. This is why silence is so deeply important in inner work, where we no longer listen to those voices that say, oh, well, this is interesting and that's interesting and let's talk about this person and not that person and all that other stuff. We just don't go into it. It's a waste of our time. So, yes, there are things that I would love to be able to share with you. I am sharing them with you now. The problem is, can you hear it? Can you actually hear it? Can you hear what I am saying to you? I'm saying it not just through my words, but through the pause, the gap, the spaces that exist between my words. It is there that you will find the meaning of this life. It is there that you will find the context of authentic living. And when you are no longer trying to think from emotionality, you will find you hear a lot more. You will also realize you understand a lot further than you used to understand. You will feel what you did not think. You will feel it intuitively, not emotionally. And when that starts to occur, big changes start to happen in our life. We start to live our life from the context of no mind. A mind no longer pitting itself against itself because the emotions are pitting themselves against themselves. And you will start to have a deeper understanding about the nature of your life and the beauty of it. Yes, you can do this. Anyone can do this. It is very simple to do. Why don't we do it? Because we're intrigued with our gratifications. Everything we do, Richard, is for some sort of gratification. Everything we do is for some sort of reward. We want something to happen for anything we do. So just with that attitude, we lose a lot of what is going on in the meaning of our life and what it means to have meaning in our life. It's all about love, dear one. And love is perpetuated and discovered through the atonement of silence. I hope that helps you. I'm trying to tell you right now, Richard, that there is only love. That you and I are love. and that we met in these circumstances in this way for the sake of love. It's all about love. Please forgive me. Namaste. The last question. This comes from Thomas. What is prayer? What words should one use when one has been so unreligious all their life? I think I should be praying. Richard. Richard, the average person thinks that prayer is a petition, some kind of petition to God, a God that they believe exists and puts thumbs up or thumbs down, that judges you and makes you feel as though you're worthy or unworthy. So this ploy has been used by Catholic churches and Christian churches and all sorts of denominations in order to keep the herd together. It's very important to keep the herd going and move along, little doggy. But don't you see, that's a ploy. Let me tell you what prayer is. Everything you do, every act you do, everything you touch is a form of prayer. Everything. Nothing you touch is not a prayer. Nothing you do is not a prayer. So what is behind everything you and I think, say, do, and touch? What is behind that? What are we talking about here? We are talking about the meaning of our life. We are talking about everything being sacred. And how I touch anything is how I touch everything. So if I touch my fork and my knife the same way I would touch a hammer and a screwdriver, there's going to be some issues, especially with someone like me. Everything is prayer, and every prayer is, so to speak, answered, because prayer is how I live from within myself to my world. I think it is very important to make prayer very important in a person's life. So what you get out of meditation, what comes out of meditation, what beauty exudes out of meditation should exude through my hands, my actions, and everything that I do, how I clean my kitchen, how I clean my toilet, should be just as important as how I pet my Cocker Spaniel and how I take care of my human body. Everything is important, and everything is a prayer, and everything comes to fruition through prayer. And when prayer is more important to you than what you want, then you begin to understand how you clean your house, how you drive your car, how you walk across the street, how mindful you are, how compassionate you are, how willing you are to let love live you. That becomes your prayer. From there, everything becomes sacred. If there's anything we've lost, Thomas, in this world, it is the sacredness of life. We have no sacredness at all. We have things that we are emotionally bound to through sentimentality, but we have no sense of sacredness. We don't even care about the sacred. We think of things as being important, but not sacred. So, what is more sacred, a pile of dog poop or your child? That is what's before you. You can look at it any way you want to look at it. Well, the dog poop is dog poop. It's a different thing. And my child is a living thing and da, da, da. But it's all sacred. And when you can't tell one thing from another in the form of their importance, and you see the bigger picture of your life through the oneness of your heart, you will start to see the meaning of your life penetrate through everything. And that, my friend, is what authentic sacredness is all about. That's how you live in it. There is a sense of loving kindness that is provoked through meditation, and then meditation becomes the virtual actions of our life in everything that we do, and we start living our life from meditation rather than from fear, emotionality, sentimentality, anger, whatever it is that we're going through at the time. It is all about what is behind everything that we do. And should you be willing to do that, live in that, you will find, oh, such grace in your life. And grace comes with mercy. And all of us need a state of mercy. All of us. I hope you will be merciful with me. And please forgive me. Namaste. If you have a comment, a question, something you would like me to work upon with you here on this radio program, go to the website at aspire.org. At the top of the page, you will see contact. Just email me. I won't use your name or your living space where you live in this world if you don't want me to, but it would help if you did. But it's okay if you don't. I'm out of here. I'll be back on the air next weekend. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful Sunday. And please forgive me, eh? Namaste.